Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Thank you for attending this presentation today. I will try to present some slides about where we are, where we would like to go, and I will try to leave enough time at the end for questions about what I will present today. So this is the agenda. I mean, the first question is why an investor briefing and why today? I believe that today we are in a specific moment of our history as Atlantia. We are at the end of core business stabilization. I joined the company in 2001, as general manager, so with some responsibility then. I remember how complex was the situation then. We have a lot of regulatory rumors and issues with a big work to be executed in the most difficult geological areas of Italy, which is not an easy country compared with other countries like Variante di Valico, with totally unknown outcome. With a re-leverage done in 2003 to increase return for shareholders, but increasing the debt for the company as well, with a lot of operational issues from safety to efficiency to quality of maintenance. Now we are at the end of that process. The Variante di Valico is totally completed. All the risk is behind. And I mean, we have very solid ground in Italy to build the future development of the group. We are in the middle as well of a diversification path. We were 100% Italian in 2008. Now the global GDP percentage, GDP-driven percentage of EBITDA, is in excess of 25%, thanks to the international component of Rome Airport, thanks to Nice, thanks to the international roads we acquired in the meantime. We are way from where we were in 2008, but we are just ahead of a significant business acceleration. We believe that we are in a situation with a lot of tailwind, thanks to rates, especially in advanced economies. We have a lot of financial flexibility, and we believe that we can accelerate doing more or less the same of what we did in the last years to increase exposure to global GDP in order to reduce our cost of capital, as simple as that. Another important element of value creation in the future is our organization. We can finally restructure the group in a more efficient way and visible way with four pillars: Italian toll roads, international toll roads, airports, and other businesses, mainly payment systems. We can do now because now, finally, thanks to a law in 2011, ASPI can issue debt without any limitation that was present in the Italian legislation before. We believe that we are in the process of fixing and crystallizing the value of Autostrade per l'Italia, which is, from our point of view, a very valuable asset, especially if we consider the huge optionality we have in that concession. And we believe that we are in the process of optimizing cost of capital thanks to turnover of debt, which is something we are doing and accelerating quite fast. In numbers, what I said is represented in this slide. We were in 2000 at 1.1 billion euros. We spent 7 years to restructure the Italian business with the average TSR from 2000 to 2007 of 21%, with a huge debt at the time, if we consider the commitments, the out-of-balance sheet liabilities represented by the commitment to execute the Variante di Valico and other small works. In 2007, we had a debt on EBITDA at the group level of 4.5 after re-leverage in 2003, and 0% represented by global GDP-driven. In 2015, we are in excess of 25%. If we consider Nice as well, we are above that number. with the debt on EBITDA at group level that is 3.2 times, you see that, I mean, the room for more debt, more leverage is significant, even if you consider the quality of rating we have today. So what we did in between 2007 and 2015 has been to increase global GDP exposure in order to reduce cost of capital and increase debt capacity. Urban toll roads in Chile and Brazil are a quite successful move. You will see numbers later, but we invested less than 500 million euros to build a portfolio of assets, most of them urban, that will represent in 2020, I anticipate one slide, more than 800 million euros EBITDA on a 100% basis. We don't have 100%. We have less on average between not far from 60%, but still is a huge return. Airports is a new move. We are very happy about what we did with Aeroporti di Roma. We are very happy about what we did with Nice Airport. And we believe that is not over. That game is a game that can continue to go ahead, especially on airports with a strong international network and connectivity that are global destinations. And we believe that also the tolling system business, that was a very marginal one in 2001, I remember that there was no value attributed to that asset at that time, is becoming a very valuable one with very, very good financial performances. What will be beyond 2016? Let me say more of the same of what we did between 2007 and 2015. Between 2007 and 2015, please remember that 2007 was the peak of traffic, the peak of everything in our sector, especially in Italy. Since then, we provided to investors a TSR of 8%, which is probably not a skyrocketing number, but if you consider that since then we had a negative traffic dynamic, especially because of 2012 negative performance in Italy, is a quite promising number, quite important number. So more of the same, but I will tell you more about what is more and what is the same. What we are is something you know quite well. We are quite spread and with exposure to totally different and disconnected economies. For example, right now, Brazil is not doing well at all, but Chile is doing very, very well still. And again, after a period of small slowdown, Poland is doing very well, exceptionally. India is doing exceptionally. And Italy is doing, I mean, very, very well. You will see later. I mean, we are continuing to grow versus last year. That was a good year at 3.5%. And what's more important is that heavy traffic is doing even better than light traffic. So let me say why we should be successful in this acceleration. And we are very convinced about what we are writing in this slide. What is different about Atlantia? The first element is quality of the assets and long-term concessions. You will see later, you have some benchmarks. We have the longest concessions. And we have assets that are high quality. What's the quality of an asset? We will see later. But the quality of an airport, for example, is the ability to benefit from global growth and the ability for the concessionaire to expand capacity at regulated, agreed, and good returns. This is a quality asset. A quality asset in toll roads is an asset with urban traffic that normally grows at multiples of GDP. How we are experiencing, for example, in Chile or in some assets in Brazil, and assets that are heavily congested, requiring additional works and the bottlenecking agreed between the concessionaire and the government at agreed returns. This is quality of asset, an asset where you can continue to invest to increase returns and to not be exposed to traffic risk. This is a quality asset, and we believe we have quality assets. And option value in current portfolio is a result of an asset of high quality, an asset of high quality that is very important for a country, very important for a city, normally justifies additional works, additional addendum, additional tariffs, extension of duration of the concession. What's different about us as well is competence-driven business. Normally, we tend to consider the infrastructure business as a business that is just driven by cost of capital. It's true, cost of capital. Capital is raw material. If you are competitive in buying raw material, you are competitive in general terms. But there is a transformation of the raw material. And we believe that we have special capabilities in transforming the raw material, which is financing, into returns. Why? Because if you consider Autostrade per l'Italia, what it is, it's the most congested road network in the world, the largest concession in the world, is the concession with the highest number of transactions. We are talking about several millions per day of transactions. Is a network with 500 tunnels we manage every day in safety and so on. Is 500 bridges. Is a huge network. In order to manage well that network, you need to develop capabilities to manage efficiently a very complex system. By the way, it's the oldest network in the world. And you are forced to develop capabilities to manage that. And the capabilities you have developed in that you can use in other businesses. Take, for example, the service areas business. You can benchmark our performances in service areas with the performances of all other road concessioners in the world. There is no player in the world capable to extract as much value as we do from service areas, by far. And we believe that these competencies will help us to transform the raw material, which is cost of capital, in a very efficient way to provide returns. Compelling dividend and long-term and long-run growth. We believe that we are different not because we have the highest dividend yield, not because we have the highest dividend growth, but because we believe that we can have both for longer. Highest dividend yield, highest dividend growth for longer thanks to the long duration of concessions. And last and not least, financial flexibility. I mean, we don't have cash. We are not sitting on cash, which is would be quite inefficient. But we have extra debt capacity, which is quite significant. With, a 3x EBITDA on Atlantia, total debt, you see how much flexibility we can have and how much we can be efficient in turning portfolio and accelerating exposure to global GDP. These are a few benchmarks about what we believe that is quality asset. For example, 100 kilometers in Santiago, 100 kilometers in São Paulo of urban toll roads is quite unique. Rome Airport, Nice Airport, we are talking about global destinations. The concession life, you see, is quite long. The traffic is much higher than competitors. 43,000 vehicles per day means that there is need for the bottlenecking, need for further works, which is a very, very big opportunity for optionality. Well-established regulatory framework. It's easy to talk about regulatory framework. What I can tell you is that I have personally negotiated 3 contracts. One is the 2002 ASPI contract, before then 2007. The second was 2007 ASPI single concession agreement. The 2012 ADR concession has been negotiated with my support. They were part of the group. Probably there was already a vision about merging. And all these contracts are quite new, quite protective for investors. And 2016, Aeroport de la Côte d'Azur regulation is quite brand new. It's very efficient, as we will see later. So what is high quality asset for us? is, for example, Interroad's price cap with no rollback mechanism, because price cap can help you benefit from the good choices you did in buying good assets. It means dual till in airports. All our airports are dual till, because single till cannot create extra value in transforming capital into returns. Dual till can provide much more value. This is why all our airports are dual till. And of course, what we believe that is important in regulation is countries. All the countries we are in have respected contracts at the end. And I mean, for a country, it's very difficult not to respect contracts. You have seen all the saga of French concessions at the end, started in 2013 with, I mean, the risk of having the contract canceled and the concession bought back by the government, ended up with an extension of concessions. So sometimes the regulatory risk is over-perceived by investors. So quality asset for us is very important. And this is something where we believe different from others. And quality asset means a lot of optionality. In Italy, we have roughly 11 billion of capex at regulated returns under discussion or already agreed, all of them included in our contract. So we have the right to develop those projects at regulated returns that are at least equal to cost of capital, and others at the cost of capital of 2002, which is much higher than current cost of capital. And this is a real value for us. And the works are expected to start quite soon because, for example, for the largest investment, which is Genoa Bypass, we got the urbanistic and environmental approvals quite fast, by the way. And the government should, I mean, give to us quite soon the final green light. By the way, is negotiating with the European community. This is not a secret, an extension of our concession to help us to develop that project without huge tariff increases, which is good for, I mean, the volume point of view, even if elasticity in our business is quite low. Chile, we are at good returns, the bottlenecking activities. In Brazil, we have another optionality, which is to buy with no traffic risk for the next years at real equity return of 11%, which is good for Brazil, a very good asset, which is half, 50% of São Paulo, Rodoanel, Ring Road. I mean, it's a very significant asset. And this is optionality. So optionality is the name of the game in our business and is something where returns are agreed and protected and well above our cost of capital. CapEx option value is something that refers to Fiumicino as well. Fiumicino is the main airport in Italy. It's growing quite fast in the long term. And I mean, is at peak capacity today. A lot of works should be executed. In our contract, there are roughly 4.5 billion of enlargement and refurbishing of Fiumicino South area, the existing area, at regulatory weighted average cost of capital for the next 5 years. Is something that is quite recent. Not yet concluded, but the consultation started with the approval from the authority, which is ENAC, of a return of 8.5% roughly for as a regulatory weighted average cost of capital for the next 5 years, which is quite good. We have 4.5 billion at that return, and we have other 5.5 billion of further works to add a new runway and the new terminals at weighted average cost of capital plus a premium of up to 4%, which is quite significant to reward the construction risk, which is, by the way, something we can manage directly quite well. Most of the works are done by a control company called Pavimental that has a strong competency in runways, in buildings, and so on. So this is optionality. Optionality is the possibility to increase capacity of key assets for the country at agreed returns that are rewarding for the investor. This is a huge value. And you will see in the numbers. Let me say something about competencies. I mean, I'm very proud about what I'm presenting in this slide. Just yesterday evening, we got the information that the ACI, which is the acronym for Airport Council International, which is the IATA-controlled or affiliated company responsible for measuring quality in all the airports in the world, or at least 200 and something, the most important airports in the world, I mean, published the results of the last quarter. I remember that when we acquired end of 2013, Aeroporti di Roma, there were a lot of complaints about quality of everything. Every service was poor. Fiumicino was one of the five poorest performers in the world in the airports. We started to apply the Atlantia model. 80% of new senior managers, 60% from Atlantia. New processes, totally brand new processes in these new years. A lot of insourcing. I mean, the name of the game in Atlantia is insourcing. If you have a problem, keep it in your, I mean, area. Otherwise, you will never solve that problem. You will give to others the possibility to, I mean, ricattare, how you name it in English, to blackmail you. Yes. Because, I mean, they have the control of your problem. We have insourced also cleaning of toilets. And the results are there. I mean, in 2 years, we have done something that is really totally unexpected. The possibility to move from the last position in the world, one of the five worst positions in the world, to a leading position ahead of all the other airports with 40 million passengers. Is Heathrow, is Schiphol, is Madrid, is Munich, is Frankfurt, is Paris. We are ahead. I'm not saying that is totally scientifically perfect as a methodology, but I can assure you that all the other airports see that Fiumicino is ahead of them. So it's the same number published and given to everybody. And this, I mean, the result of the efforts and the application of Atlantia capabilities, we are very proud about. This, I mean, a way to demonstrate that we are good in managing assets, and we do expect to be capable to do the same in all the assets we will buy and control. In Grupo Costanera, we have been capable to grow EBITDA much faster than traffic, much faster. Also much faster than traffic and tariffs, much faster because of efficiencies. The EBITDA margin when we bought, for example, Vespucio Sur from Spanish construction company was below 50%. Now is in excess of 85%, just to give a point of reference. And in Brazil is the same, much faster. Is centralization of central services, integration of staff functions, in sourcing, IT management. We are applying all tolling technologies we have in-house in Chile, for example, and we are selling services to other competitors. This is our way to do business, our way to transform capital, the raw material, into results. As I said before, we are restructuring our company structure. Since today, all the main assets, overseas motorways and correlated businesses, like Telepass especially, were below or are below Italian motorways. This is not efficient at all. In order to accelerate the upstream of dividends, we have decided to have all these assets directly controlled by Atlantia. So we are splitting out of Italian motorways, the overseas motorways, the Telepass business, to have direct control from Atlantia. This is a way to have more focused platforms by industry. It's an issue of capital rotation as well, having this kind of structure, we can decide, and we have decided, to sell minorities that can be very little minorities to financial investors willing to be exposed to that specific market or risk or asset or dividend profile. And it's a way to find partners if we want. And it's a way, what is more important, to optimize capital. It's a way to optimize leverage. It's a way to have a faster upstream of dividends. And the areas will be Italian motorways, roughly 2.3 billion euros of EBITDA, with 4 times EBITDA in terms of debt. Overseas motorways, 5.5 billion euros with very low debt. Airports, 0.5 billion euros with very low debt as well. And Telepass with, 100 million roughly euros EBITDA. With, that is not so significant. So this will be our structure. Let me update you on performances. Traffic, is exceptionally well and doing well in Italy, in toll roads, 3.5%, which is quite similar between light vehicles and heavy vehicles, which is very, very encouraging. Chile is always in the, 6-7% growth rate, which is very, very interesting. Brazil is not. And let me say that Brazil, is not yet, recovering. Or said differently, the first signs of recovery have been overemphasized, and there is an overreaction from investors after the first signs, the first good news. So the result is that, the underlying business is not doing yet well enough because the FX has recovered too fast, which is good in terms of euro-denominated results. We are happy because, in euros, when the reais pass from 4.5 to 3.5, we increase the value by 20-30% because of financial calculation. But, they are reacting too fast. I believe that at these rates, the recovery in Brazil will be a little bit slower than expected. But still, there will be a recovery, and still our assets are better exposed than others to recovery because they are essentially assets close to big agglomerations. And when you have assets close to big agglomerations, normally light traffic is stronger and less depending on competitiveness of the Brazilian economy, more depending on expenditure, on consumption, on budget policies that are still quite supporting. So this is about Brazil. About Poland, another 11%. Growth this year, we are having problems in following growth with the expansion of toll plazas. It's quite demanding for us to add new lanes. This is why we decided to introduce Telepass this year, and we are already close to 9% in working days with Telepass after 2 months from introduction. So things are doing well. In the airports, let me say that this is Aeroporti di Roma. This year is growing, is not growing fast, has been hit a little bit from what happened in other very interconnected destinations, what has happened in Paris, Brussels, and Istanbul is hitting. What we are missing are the volumes in those three destinations, but still is a plus that is quite good if compared with the minuses of some big airports like Frankfurt, Paris, and the like. So it's still doing well. And let me say that after 2 years at 7-6%, it's normal that a third year there will be some, optimization of capacity from airlines to make sure that they can increase profit fast enough. By the way, now the airport is really an inbound airport. In 2015, the inbound represent two-thirds, roughly, of total volumes. And inbound is driven not by Italian economy. It's driven by international global economy. And global economy is still strong. This is why we do experience still good growth from China, for example, and other big economies. These are the growth targets for Italian motorway business. It's a target. It's not a guarantee, but I mean, the drivers we utilize to assume these numbers are quite conservative. We are assuming a traffic growing in line with Italian GDP, as expected by international organizations. So not so huge. Tariff, according to contracts and to CapEx. And we are assuming 0.5% of inflation, which is not aggressive. Let me say that there is a lot of rumor about inflation right now. We believe that inflation, together with rates, will remain quite low, probably longer than expected. And, I mean, another driver, an important driver, is the issue of service areas. I mean, we just completed a renewal of more than one-third of our service areas. The results have been beyond our expectations in terms of volumes and margins for us. So this is quite reassuring that our targets can be met. And last but not least, please remember that in 2011, Monti issued a new law about retirement that frozen the retirement for 5 years, moving the retirement age from 60 to 65. This meant a frozing of that. Now we are in 2016. We are in the defrozing phase, and the retirement numbers are starting to grow faster. And this will be an opportunity for, reducing some costs in some areas. Why we have not fired people before with other hard measures? Because we felt that we're not in need to do that. We want to be a good player in the country. And let me say that the level of inefficiency or redundancies were so low that, having a big, tough maneuver would have been totally negative. Because, the oversizing is really, really small. It's more an issue of quality of people than of sizing. Overseas, this is a quite good business. The drivers are Chile. We believe that we'll continue to develop as they did in the past. By the way, we will complete next year the bottlenecking of the main toll road, which is Costanera. This will help traffic as well. Brazil, soft traffic recovery, not so much. And maintenance cycles will help us because we will finish the maintenance cycle quite soon. And the FX, we have assumed FX inflation adjusted. It's probably, a quite basic assumption, but probably in the long term is the best possible assumption to have the FX adjusted with differences in inflation. Together, including the exercise of the call option in Rodoanel, we will reach roughly 830 million euros EBITDA. Just as a reminder, the exercise of call option in Rodoanel will not require further equity. It will be just the transformation of some loans we have from ABC, which is our holding in Brazil, toward Mr. Bertin, who is our partner as well. So there will be no cash out. There will be just transformation from a loan into equity. Aeroporti di Roma. Let me say that after the exceptional results in quality, we know that the name of the game in the next years will be more capex and more efficiency. Now we can. now that we have demonstrated that we can provide a good service. And by the way, by the end of the year, this year, so in 1 or 2 months, we will open a totally brand new area in extra Schengen, the so-called Avancorpo, together with a new pier that will add capacity, but what's more important, will add a lot of commercial offer. I mean, all the luxury brands will be there, and we do expect to increase volumes based on the awards we already completed by 30% in terms of spending per pax, thanks to that new area. And we will be capable to increase the average capex per year from the 200 million in the previous 5 years to 400 million in the next 5 years. So we will double the capex that will be remunerated at 8.5% plus SuperVac for the capex that will increase capacity, which is more or less 50% for the next period. So it's not very high growth rate in EBITDA, but it's not bad. I mean, a 7% growth rate yearly is quite good. And we believe that thanks to the regulatory framework we have is totally achievable. A few words about Nice. I mean, before the tender, there was a lot of rumor about extra competition, a lot of bidders, crazy prices, and so on. Before to talk about prices, let me say that at the end, only 3-4 offers have been submitted. Only 3-4 pension / infrastructure funds have submitted an offer. Predica with Vinci and... who else with Vinci? And Caisse des Dépôts, yes, sorry. CPP, were together with Zurich, retired. Ahead. Allianz, together with GIP, retired. Ardian submitted an offer together with a partner. But, I mean, at the end, not so many. So a lot of competition theoretically, but practically when the infrastructure pension funds need to have a partner to manage, at the end, the number of players. And the number of partners with deep pockets shrinks a lot. This is why, at the end, there's been a game between us and Vinci. Till the last, I mean, meter or centimeter. So competition, yes, is there. But if you are good, if you are perceived as a good partner by people with low cost of capital, you can have opportunities to win, and competition is not so huge as expected. So what about the asset? Why we like so much that asset? Because first is exposed to mega trends, aging of population becoming richer and richer, especially the old guys. It's something that is totally in line with what will be the world in the future, which is not necessarily a good evolution, but is reality. Because the asset helps us in funding efficiently. And you will see what means efficiently. Strong local partnership is important. And by the way, if you remember the newspapers at that time, the local authorities said, we prefer Atlantia, which is quite important as a starting point, without having given to them anything, which is more important. There is a significant commercial and operational upside. When a company has been managed by the state, at the end, you will find opportunities everywhere. You don't even imagine how many opportunities you will find, even if the management is good. Mr. Thiou is a good guy. I know him since 2011 when he participated to the EcoTax project together with us. Within SNCF. So he's a good guy, but, I mean, has been state-controlled. So opportunities are huge. And let me say that thanks to financing, you will see later, we are capable to have return on equity, even with conservative tariff and traffic assumptions, a premium on cost of debt in excess of 6%. I mean, an equity risk premium in excess of 6% in a, such kind of destination is a good return from our point of view. What is Aéroports Côte d'Azur? Is Nice, is Cannes, is even Saint-Tropez. Is more the name that I mean, the asset. The real issue is that there are not so many connections. We believe that there is a big opportunity to unlock value by opening new destinations. We felt, and all the local authorities and all and the management feel that I mean the potential of this airport has been, compressed by Air France and Aéroports de Paris. We will see down the road if they are right or not. We believe that they are right. Okay. As I said, double till is quite complex in the mechanism. The essence of this slide is that the commercial rents, airport tax, and the commercial and the rents are out of regulated business. So is a real dual till. Most of the value will come from commercial activities. And this is, why we are so excited about these assets. And we were not so excited about Lyon. Lyon had a totally different regulation. This doesn't mean that they will not change regulation, down the road. But if taking into consideration that they were selling an asset, the state, they could have, said or given guarantees about the change in regulation if they wanted to have higher price. If they didn't, probably they will stay as they are, if they don't want to lose value in the transaction. Why we believe that there is an upside? If you look at sales per departing pax versus a comparable average, they are probably 40% below. If you look at food and beverage, they are 50% of what other airports are, but it's sufficient to visit Nice. I don't know how many of you know the Nice airport. It's a very old-fashioned airport without surfaces, with the commercial surfaces wrongly placed. For example, all the food business is in land side, not air side. So before the controls, not after the controls. It's totally different from all the other airports in the world. So there is a lot of stuff to do, and we will do. On efficiency, in terms of cost per pax, in Aeroporti di Roma, we are at 7. In Nice, they are at 12. We will need time. Of course, we will act in Nice as we acted in Italy and in Autostrada and Aeroporti di Roma, never firing people. But with time, we will get there. We are sure. Financing. What's important is the small number of 650 million plus the 130 million, which represents more or less 11 times on a 100% basis of EBITDA. All this structure has been considered investment grade by rating agencies thanks to our plan, acquisition plan, and we have been capable to finance this transaction with a cost of funding which is very competitive. And this is something that we can do. Other investors sometimes have some limitations in acquisition financing, in adding debt in intermediate vehicles. And we have hedged, fully hedged for the entire life of concession, all the cost of base rates. So the only risk we have is for a certain period, the cost of spread. But even assuming a cost of spread that will go up, which is normally not the case, we are well below 3% for the entire life of concession in terms of cost of debt, well below, probably closer to 2% than to 3%. This is how, you can create a lot of value, even paying theoretically, a multiple which is high. This is why I never like multiples, because multiples do not represent anything. And we believe that, I mean, our plan is totally sound and reliable. By the way, we checked some points of reference. We have seen that our plan was much more conservative than other bidders' plan. So it's a conservative plan, but thanks to upside from commercial businesses, efficiency, and financial structure, which is even more important, we believe that we can have a premium cost of debt, as I said, in the range of 6% in terms of return on equity versus cost of debt, which is something hard to find in other geographies. I mean, the extreme is Brazil, where at current prices, cost of equity is even below cost of debt. Today in Brazil, it's better to be a bank than an entrepreneur. By the way, the banks are surviving well. All the others are dying. Further upside not considered in our numbers in the debt 6% is the real estate. This is an upside. They have rights to build 150,000 square meters close to the metro, close to the airport, which is, I mean, a huge value. And the regulation in new routes opening. I mean, the regulatory battle we will fight in France and in Brussels can have upsides that we are not capable today to size. But, I mean, it's upside. So this is what we did. These are the reasons why we believe that has been a very good transaction for us. But we will see down the road if we are right. Few words about payment systems. Italy and Autostrade has been the first to introduce electronic tolling system. We have been the first to introduce monitoring average speed to increase safety on the entire network, most of the network, let's say more than 2,000 kilometers. We have the first to install a nationwide free flow system for heavy vehicles in Austria. In 2003, we have been the first to apply a European standard satellite system for heavy vehicles in France, partially unsuccessfully in the sense that we got the price, we got the money, we got the profit, but the system has been scrapped by the government for political reasons, which is a pity, by the way. We are present in Europe, and we do represent a significant part of the market in Europe. And we are making good profit. And that is not just the device, it's more a payment system. Telepass is a payment system. But Telepass is 8 million bank accounts with direct debiting. That's Telepass, which is a huge, opportunity to enlarge the market, what we are doing, starting from Italy, adding other services like payment of services, payment of parking, payment of blue strips, so road parkings in Italy, and so on. And we believe that we can continue to grow, expanding to fuel. This is a project ongoing right now, to car wash, fines, and so on. But, I mean, fuel is the big part. So we are moving faster on mobility payments. We are a payment system, and we believe that we can increase significantly the value, and we believe that Telepass could be, a consolidator or could be part of a consolidator because it's quite a unique asset. Other operators in the world do not have this competence. If you look at other big players in toll concessions, they don't have, such a big customer base, they don't have full control in the value chain. They don't have this optionality we do have, and they don't have the 100 million EBITDA we do have. So, as I said, there is a huge world of consolidation from the fleet core-like players coming from fuel, DKFAO, from the tolling like Access, Eurotoll, from mobility services, from Uber and so on, There is a big market from payment services, instant payment like Jiffy, Satispay in Italy, and PayPal, and so on. It's a market that is moving. We believe that we can be a good solution for them, and they can be a good solution for us. We are part of that market with 8 million customers with direct debiting, which is quite unique. Financial update. This is the sum of what you have seen before. Nothing more, nothing less. What I will emphasize is the small number at the bottom of the slide. Net debt on EBITDA would go from 3.4 to 2.4, even after investing in optionality capex and so on. It means that the company has a huge cash generation. What would we do with that debt capacity, which is huge? This is the question. And the answer I will give to you, of course. What else? Our rating is very good. I mean, for some rating agencies, is like Italian Republic. For others, is one notch. For others, is two notches above Italian Republic. And this is the result of exposure to global GDP. As simple as that. I mean, we are capable to be disconnected to Italian, from Italian economy, from Italian GDP, because we are international with very liquid assets, as you have seen. This is why, I mean, being more global has a direct implication in cost of funding and the solidity and resilience in funding strategies. And resilience means you can have more debt at equal risk. By the way, as I said, we have tailwind. Debt allocation will be more, I mean, rational thanks to the new law. The debt, most of the debt in Atlante will be pushed down to ASPI because it was for ASPI to execute works. And of course, we will have some debt at Atlantia level. There will be a new plan, a new EMTN at Atlantia available next weeks.
Before the end of October.
Yes, next weeks. By the way, the tailwind is well represented by that curve on the right of the slide. Thanks to refinancing, the average cost of debt at current rates would go down in 8 years to 2%, down to more than 4% before and currently just below 4%. So close to 200 basis points to save. The other issue for us is how to accelerate that turnover. The real issue is accelerating the slope of the curve, adding new debt, and, I mean, turning the debt faster. The faster we turn debt, the faster we go down. So, closing remarks is, I mean, a way to summarize where we want to go. First, diversification can raise concerns about how they will spend money. I would like to say that if we spend a few minutes talking about quality of assets, it's because quality matters. We want to remain picky on targets. It means urban toll roads and brownfields, not greenfields or roads in the middle of nowhere. This is very important. In the airports, global destination airports with strong retail development potential, so double till. We are not interested in single till airports or in the size or number of passengers and so on. We are interested in the upside in commercial activities and in countries where we can create a critical mass. We are very happy about Poland, but we are not totally happy because Poland is doing very well, but we have not been capable to add critical mass to the initial asset that is performing very well. But we are not in a country to remain small. If we enter a country, it's because we want to have the optionality to buy other assets. So we will try to go in countries where we can create a critical mass and benefit from the competitive advantage of being an insider. So we will remain picky. we will explore correlated infrastructure businesses. The same competencies we have applied in toll roads can be applied in other activities, for example, toll collection, payment systems. We do have competencies, and we continue to explore. By the way, these assets and these sectors are not so capital intensive as toll roads and airports. Toll roads and airports are probably the most intense capital assets in the panorama. Other comment, the largest ever spread in advanced economies between cost of debt and cost of equity. It means that the ability to structure acquisition financing is a key competitive advantage to win. It's not just, I mean, a statement. It is, I mean, what happened in Nice? What happened in Nice is that thanks to competitive financing, we have been capable to have a premium, according to our plan, in the range of 6% between cost of debt and cost of equity, which is quite good if you consider, I mean, the resilience of the asset. We are not talking about a risky destination or risky asset. We are talking about something that even after the, I mean, the terroristic attack is still on the positive number in terms of traffic in September. This is what we see from the numbers published. What will be remain important is key industrial competencies to exploit full value. We believe that, I mean, raw material is financing is important, but you need to transform as well. There is a transformation content. And we believe that thanks to our competencies in electronic tolling, automation, commercial development, operating efficiencies, we can provide extra value. This is the advantage we believe that we can provide. Even if sometime we are less optimistic than others on traffic forecast. We have seen in recent tenders or negotiations that there are others willing to buy a very optimistic long-term growth rate in traffic. We are never. We are more, I mean, aggressive in targeting cost reduction, in targeting commercial upsides. So the more complex the asset it is, the more competitive we are. In plain vanilla, sometimes we are not so competitive than others that are willing to buy something that is just a dream, which is high growth rate in traffic. And we have seen how many dreams revealed to be not, I mean, real. Capital flexibility. We want to, accelerate growth, accelerate exposure to global GDP to exploit unexploited leverage potential. We know that there is unexploited leverage potential today. The rates we have today are strong tailwind to use that capacity. And the prices of assets are not, I mean, factoring totally that low level of rates. This is why we are capable to find sometime a premium of 6% over cost of debt. Never seen. On the books, you see that normally is between 4 and 5. We have a flexibility which is no asset class restriction. We can buy listed together with non-listed. It's not an issue for us. We have no policy. We have long-term investment horizon. When we entered into Impregilo, it was 2004, when we bought for 40% or 35% of Costanera was 2005 or 6. When we bought finally control was 2011 or 12. So we can wait. We don't need to demonstrate that we have a clear path to control the day after. And as long as the asset is a good asset and our cost of capital is the lower and the lowest in the market, we can wait to take the control of the asset, if the asset is a good asset. So we are more flexible than others, and this, I believe, is a good advantage, a strong advantage to create value. Let let's enter into an issue that will raise a lot of questions probably. In this framework of turning capital faster, because turning capital faster is something that is doable today with better conditions than in the past, we will sell a 15% stake in Autostrade per l'Italia. Not 30, 15, we believe that is enough to have a market. It's not too much to create problems of dilution of earnings. It's a first step to keep enough competition in the selling process, because, I mean, 15% is not a lot. And, I mean, there are a lot of potentially interested and not potentially, really interested buyers for that asset. We believe that this will demonstrate ASPI intrinsic value, will help to re-rate Atlantia shares as the process with ADR did 1 or 2 years ago, even if this time we are more confident to come to an end, which is, will be the disposal of a 15%, because in this case, the problems of governance will not be substantial in the sense that the contract of ASPI is so clear that it's easy to give rights to a third party, even if they have a small stake, because, I mean, we need just to comply with the contract. It's very simple. In Aeroporti di Roma, was much more open, and we were not ready to compromise on how to direct the company in the right direction in the long term. There is a strong demand for that asset because it's a network, it's much more resilient, much more stable performances. Is a high quality because there is a lot of traffic, and when there is a lot of traffic, there is always a lot of optionality, which is a way to create value. Is inflation linked, strong operational performances, and so on. Is quite, I mean, specific to the asset, but is not new. And 15 is, I mean, the minimum necessary to have a real process. What else? We believe that this will help to re-rate substantially the value. I cannot tell you what's our reservation price. It's never good to give to bidders a point of reference. I believe that the market will set the price and the price will be rewarding. What Atlantia will look like in, let's say, 3-4 years? More than 50% global GDP driven. We are at 25% without Nice, together with Nice, including Nice, will be higher. And we want to accelerate. This will help having more balanced portfolio of assets. And when you have a more balanced portfolio of assets, you have generally, as Atlantia, a lower cost of equity. It's very simple. It's just mathematics. It's a way to reduce the cost of raw material. And it's a way to increase leverage. The turnover of portfolio will help introduce more debt, and more debt will be justified by higher diversification. As I said, if we have two notches above Italian Republic for S&P, it's because we are global, and we have a part of the portfolio that is liquid and global. We want to, I mean, go faster in that direction. By the way, we have a leverage that will help us to be very competitive in new initiatives. Keeping a target, which is high-quality assets. And high-quality, as I said, is long concessions, is vital assets for the country, is optionality. This is a way to create value down the road. Deeper in countries of presence. Of course, we don't want to double the number of countries we are present in. Probably we will add 1 or 2 countries, but most of the assets will be bought in countries where we are, or a good part will be there. We will try to go deeper in a geography. An integrated group combining key core competencies in infrastructure. Of course, you have seen Aeroporti di Roma results in such a short period of time are driven by the 60% of people sent by Atlantia to manage key processes, key activities, key competencies. All these should not change our policy and will not, even more important, will not change our policy. We believe that thanks to performances, thanks to optionality, thanks to the tailwind in cost of funding, we can maintain, even if our current dividend yield is already quite good, a 10% dividend annual growth rate. It's totally compatible with this scenario of increasing exposure to global GDP. So this is more or less what we want to do. It's nothing totally new. It's probably more of the same. I try to explain to you what for us is more and what is the same we want to do in the next years. Thank you very much for the attention. I'm ready for questions.
Mr. Castellucci.
Yes.
You have managed what you had in an outstanding way.
Yeah.
Great financial discipline.
Yeah.
You've added businesses both strategically but also opportunistically. There's no question what we can see here. You created value and you created optionality. Now, as you look at your business, your environment going forward, what is your biggest concern and what excites you most about the future for your company?
One concern is that at the end of 2-3 years, we will end up seeing that we have not been capable to invest all the money we could, and we should give back money to shareholders, which is not a bad thing in itself, but it demonstrates that the management of the company is not capable to add further value versus what can be created by shareholders investing elsewhere. It's not, a defeat, is not a tragic situation. It's probably something you would like to get, by the way, or to hear. But, we have the capacity to invest. We have the competencies to invest. We have the money to invest. The worst that could happen is that we are not capable to invest enough money. And, we will increase further the dividend policy to shareholders, which is not bad. I don't believe that we will be at the point to invest in bad assets just for the sake of investing money, because this is not part of our story. Is not part of our personal orientation. Most of us are engineers. We tend to be very straight to the point and to analyze the asset as they are. So this is the concern. What is the ambition? The ambition is in the slides. The ambition is to be one of the few Italian players capable to compete at the highest level of competitiveness in the world, in a world of infrastructures where Italians have been since the beginning. I would like to remember that the first road ever in the world has been in Varese, between Milano and Varese, 1931. The first ever Eurobond has been issued by Autostrade per l'Italia, 63. The first ever long toll road has been built, privately financed, has been built by IRI in Italy in 62. The first ever privately financed toll road in UK has been built by Autostrade, the M6 toll. The first ever toll road privately developed toll road in US has been developed by us, the Dallas Greenway in Washington. The first ever tolling system has been developed by Autostrade. So we can play in that world based on competencies. And it's probably one of the few sectors where Italy and Autostrade has a real competence to be there. So it's a dream, but it's not a realistic dream. I believe that we can succeed in creating a lot of value to shareholders, even growing in a profitable way. This is what we have done in the past, by the way. Thank you.
Good morning. Yes. Elodie Hall from JP Morgan. Thank you very much for your presentation today. I'd have a couple of questions, if I may. So first of all, on capital allocation, you're saying it's very clear that you want to do international diversification, but you're saying you're not there to invest for the sake of investing. Obviously, you're not a forced buyer. Would you consider doing some share buyback if you don't find any attractive opportunity? And second, on capital allocation, you've talked about what assets you'd like to buy, but not necessarily what geographies you are focusing on. You talk about countries of critical mass, but are there countries that you are specifically focusing on and others that you specifically would not go to? So that's my first question. Second, on the stake sale of ASPI, first of all, could you give us a bit more color on the process and timing? And second, I understand you're not going to give us a price, but can you give us some more color about your long-term assumption in terms of traffic growth? I mean, we understand 2% until 2020, but after that, is it still in line with GDP, or do you see there a structuring reason to be more or less optimistic? And in terms of margin expansion potential, EBITDA margin, you're saying retirement will accelerate from here. Is there a theoretical limit to EBITDA margin at ASPI at the end in 2038? Yeah. And if I may throw in a last question on Genoa CapEx.
On?
Genoa CapEx. You mentioned possibility of extension.
Yeah.
Can you give us a bit more color there?
Yes.
Thank you.
So a lot of questions. I hope to be capable to remember and answer to all of them. I mean, when I say giving back money to shareholders, we can do different ways. The buyback of shares is probably the most efficient one. And by the way, we have a full potential because we do not have any treasury stock today, different from others. So that's a potential we still have intact to give back money or to use efficiently our debt capacity. I mean, it's the best way is to invest on ourselves. So is a possibility is probably in case we will decide to give more money to shareholders is probably the most efficient way to do. I will start from the last question, Genoa bypass, more color. The project has been approved by local authorities in a very short period of time, demonstrating the strong support from local authorities. The urbanistic authorization has been obtained in less than 100 days, which is a record for Italy. The government is starting discussions with the European community officially using the same methodology applied by France or applied by European community with France. What has been done with France is very interesting for us. It's a good, path to concession extensions at good rates, and this is what the government is asking to European community. By the way, in case there will not be this extension, the tariff impact of that work will be manageable. I remember that the Italian tariffs are the lowest in Europe. The upside potential in tariffs is quite significant, so the alternative of having the work financed by tariffs is still there, is still intact. But, the extension could be an upside, depending on how we will negotiate point by point the different elements, but France is a good benchmark. I don't believe that Italy and us can go too far from what has been done by them. Other question?
On ASPI, the valuation, the timing of the stake sale process.
Yes, the timing, we do expect to get the final binding offers and to sign a preliminary contract by February. This is our expectation. We will receive the non-binding offers quite soon, in 4 weeks or something like that. And this is more or less the timing. The other question was about?
What long-term traffic assumption and margin?
Yeah, the traffic and the counters and traffic assumptions. The traffic assumptions, normally, we tend to be coherent. We are not ready to buy assets with, very high traffic forecast because we don't trust. This is why what we will sell, we will sold with a vendor plan with traffic that will be very moderate. We are talking about something that will not be far from 1%. Because I don't believe that, selling something at much more than 1% could be credible. We want to have rather people willing to buy at low rate of return, a very reliable and resilient asset, rather than, selecting implicitly with very high traffic forecast, people willing to have higher returns and probably more aggressive way to manage business. So we want long-term investors with conservative assumptions and very low cost of capital. This is the kind of asset of players we want. Talking about the margin, let me say that EBITDA depends a lot on the asset, on the tolling system, on the maintenance you need to execute, on the different stuff. We have assets with the same methodologies that have 90% EBITDA and assets that have 60 and plus percent EBITDA. It depends on internalization. It depends on a lot of stuff. There is room for optimization in Autostrade per l'Italia, for sure. The retirement acceleration after 5 years of freezing will be an opportunity, will be part of the plan, but we will not sell crazy or dreaming targets because Autostrade is still a complex network. As I said, when you have 500 tunnels, when you have 500 bridges and so on, you need to make sure that the road is properly managed. It's not a road in the middle of nowhere with nothing aside, with no problems. So there will be an increase, but will be a totally reasonable and supported increase. Talking about countries, of course, when we say that we believe we are very competitive in cost of equity and cost of capital, I say this as Atlantia, but the return on assets should be adjusted with local risks. And we are present today in India, in Brazil, in Chile, in North America, in France, Europe more generally. Europe is a potential target, all Europe, because, the premium between cost of debt and return on equity is at all-time high still. All-time high, justifies, a strong attention in Europe. Probably we didn't have in the past. Brazil is in the opposite. Today, there is a cost of debt that is higher than return on equity according to market prices. So Brazil, we are there. We will look at, we will keep an eye. We will be ready to buy if there will be distressed sellers of very good assets. But probably there will be little in the future besides the exercise of call option that will be at pre-agreed return on equity contractually, which is 11% real, which is reasonable, with no traffic risk. In Poland, we would like to, but, there are very few opportunities. In India, we could play the consolidation if and when the large number of distressed assets will come to the market and banks will stop to support, very weak projects and initiatives will come sooner or later. But, the amount of equity invested there will remain very limited. In Chile or in Latin and Central America, more generally, we believe that there will be good opportunities with risk-adjusted returns that are compelling. So from Mexico included down to, I stop to Brazil, Argentina is not yet, totally a safe place. We need to see a little bit more what will happen. By the way, we are participating, is not a secret, together with Mexican pension funds and CDPQ. We can say this, it's not a secret, to the process of disposal from Goldman Sachs of a large network, the largest network in Mexico. It's not a secret. What is good is that we are well positioned, or said differently, we could not choose better our partners in Mexico, local pension funds, and the largest, long-term investor in pension funds from outside Mexico, already present in Mexico with three assets, which is CDPQ. So we are very happy about this partnership. We believe that this will help to be competitive, but I mean, always with a risk-adjusted return that should be rewarding. This is the only thing I can tell you because it's public that there will be a process there. But again, there will be competition, but I do not expect a huge number of competitors at the end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a question. I understand the reasons behind the diversification. I was wondering whether you see any risk of making the company, let's say, too complicated, and whether you see any risk of, higher holding costs, and finally, whether you have ever thought about, making the company maybe simpler in the future as a long-term target, considering that you are, diversifying the company so much in different geographies, different assets, airports, and motorways. Thank you.
Yeah. I don't know what's your perception about the number of employees of Atlantia. The number of employees of Atlantia is very limited. We are probably 20, something around 20, including auditing and so on. So, most of us have a double role. I am CEO of Atlantia and Autostrade per l'Italia. Mr. Guenzi is CFO of Autostrade per l'Italia and Atlantia. We will stay very lean. We don't want to enter into the scheme of Atlantia, the holding that gives directions, and others then that manage. No, Atlantia will remain, very close to the business, and I don't see any risk of complexity. By the way, the reason why we are looking for countries where we want to be deeper and we want to have critical mass is because we know exactly that we cannot manage too many countries, because every country you are in, you need to meet the minister, different ministers, you need to be there, you need to be present, you need to be known, and you can take take the risk of being spread into many countries without having or devoting enough time. So, if a country has a very limited potential, it's better not to stay there, even if the asset is not bad. This is why we are very concentrated, because I know that sooner or later the minister would like to meet me, and I cannot be everywhere, and Mr. Guenzi cannot be everywhere. We need to be one company with a soul, with a strategy, and we need to be present where we are. This is why we will remain very concentrated in few countries. Not necessarily the same countries we are in. There will be more, but not so many. Thank you. By the way, another potential initiative which is public is the privatization or retendering of Toll Collect in Germany. You know, Toll Collect has been a nightmare for the previous developers. I don't know if I'm right. I remember well, but probably there is a claim of 6 billion euros from the German government toward the shareholders of Toll Collect that were Daimler Chrysler, Deutsche Telekom, with a small stake and with a stop loss of Coffee Root, Solvency. Now, in 2018, it will be re-awarded with some additional works. Toll Collect is a satellite system-based tolling system for heavy vehicles. Is exactly what we do every day, what we did in France. We can be very competitive there. And let me say that probably will be not the rebuilding of the system, but the management and improving, which is even less risky and more rewarding for us.
Good morning. Vittorio Sancarelli from Santander. I have three questions, okay? The first one is related to the performance of the stock since the beginning of the year. Okay, it is down minus 10%, more or less, underperforming the entire infrastructure sector in Europe, overperforming the local domestic stock exchange. How much of this underperformance, according to your view, is given by a certain disappointment of the investors related to the new messages coming out from the presentation of the 2015 results, and how much of it is given by the current uncertainties of the political situation and the financing system in Italy? Okay.
Yeah, I ask you to be more specific about the messages or interpretation of messages in strong the presentation of 2015 results.
Yes, it is, because from that point onwards, the perception we had is that the management was even more focused than in the past in diversifying abroad Italy. Okay, so reinvestment risks inside the... Is that fair? Perfect.
Yeah.
This is the first question. The second one is related to the fact that according to the slide you showed on this acquisition, I was impressed by the leverage you are adopting in that transaction. And therefore, the thinking around this matter is the following. Now we are seeing very cheap financing and very high degree of leverage on that, combined with something that has never been in the past, so very optimistic business plan for the buyers and for the sellers. So the combination of optimism in projection plus high leverage is something that worried me a little bit than in the past. So which is your perception of this aspect?
Yeah.
And the third one is very, very easy, as usual. you talk about the difference between cost of equity and, let's say, attractive market risk premium, okay, which justify possibly your growth upside. And this is very evident in listed companies more than private transactions. Is that a correct understanding on that? That probably listed targets are actually more attractive than private targets, let's say in this way. Thank you.
Yeah, let's start from the last part. Yes, listed are more attractive, but the path to control is not so easy. I mean, that is not so easy to find a path to control in all listed assets, even if we are patient. We can wait, but I mean, in some cases, there is no way even in the long term. So, for example, Aeroporti di Roma is a transaction we did with a listed asset. It's been very rewarding for us. Venice Airport is a good airport. The price we paid is a good price compared with the current price. There is some optionality in the long term. For the time being, it's more a financial initiative, but you never know the future what will deserve. So we can be in listed assets as well. And I believe that is, I mean, a flexibility not so many have. Going backward, very optimistic, very low cost of equity, very low cost of capital, very optimistic projections. Yes, in some cases, in the sense that I said before, we are not ready to buy optimistic assumptions. The reason why we have not submitted competitive offers on London City, we participated till the end and we decided to step back because we felt that the risk profile was too high and the projections were too optimistic and so on. The reason why we have not won the tenders or the negotiations in the two Peruvian assets sold recently, where we had the privilege to see in advance the numbers before the others, in one of the two, on the other partially, is because we felt that the projections there were not reasonable at all. So in our job, it's important to be capable to say it's not doable, it's not reasonable, it's not, credible to have these projections for the entire life of concession, because normally the seller decides the time to sell. You need to be sound to understand how much of the current performance can be projected in the future and how much cannot. By the way, in our vendor plan, we are not projecting the 3.5% we are experiencing this year for the entire life of the concession. Otherwise, it would have been a value of 50 billion of ASPI, which is not credible, by the way. So we need to be capable to say no, and this is why there is still a probability that at the end we will not find enough assets to buy and we will decide to give back money to shareholders by buyback, dividends or whatever. So the risk is there, but we are not ready to buy unreasonable projections. We are ready to freeze all-time low cost of debt, because that is something you can freeze in the transaction. This is what we have done in Nice. We have frozen for the entire life of concession the cost of the base rate, the years. It's already frozen there. But we are not ready to buy, I mean, unreasonable projections for the future. Stock performance. This is your job to understand what, I mean, why there are more sellers than buyers. Even if it comes. Let me say two things. It's true that in 2016 the performance has been below European peers, but has been higher than Italian peers in the same sector, if I remember well, or not far from. The Italian sector, the Italian stock market went down, so we are overperforming Italian market. And we are in a year after 2 years of strong growth. If you look at 2014, 2015, the performances have been very good. So it's normal that time to time there is a moment of reflection and stabilization. Probably the perception that we were forced buyers with a top-down view of selling Italy and buying elsewhere was probably either badly communicated or, I mean, wrongly perceived. The reality is another. We will not sell 30% of ADR and Autostrade per l'Italia, as it was reported by some newspapers. We will sell only 15% of Autostrade per l'Italia. We don't want to have too much money in hands. And we want to combine some proceeds from asset disposal in Italy with more debt to buy new assets. The best way to make sure that there will be no dilutive effect is to sell high price Autostrade per l'Italia, and selling less will help. And in each new initiative, take the opportunity to increase the debt. This will be the best way to make sure that any increase of diversification of portfolio will not have any dilution impact and will support a reduction of cost of capital, because at the end, I mean, cost of capital matters, and we believe that higher diversification will help a lot cost of capital, which is, I mean, our raw material at the end.
Stefano, good morning. It's Victor from SocGen in Madrid. I have three questions. The first one is in the slide number 30. You mentioned in your growth targets that you are expecting for 2020 a net debt to EBITDA ratio of 2.4 times. I understand that figure doesn't include the disposal of the 15% of ASPI. The question is very simple. Just to understand the firepower that you have. Is that analyzing that at 2020, that figure shows 4.5 billion of EBITDA? Mm-hmm. Okay, we can assume more than 4 billion firepower in order to come back to levels close to 3 without that strategy. This is the first question. The second question is regarding, as you mentioned, the value optionality that you have in Italy. If you sell 15% of ASPI, is because you probably consider that the money that you are going to deploy in other assets is going to give you higher returns that we are secure in Italy. So what type of spreads you are considering that those new assets is going to give to you to the value optionality in Italy? Is the second question. And the third question is regarding on utility, and it makes sense not to give any color about the price that you can obtain on the 15% disposal, only that if you have sent to the potential bidders in your info memos a minimum price that below that level you are not going to sell. Thank you.
Yeah. So firepower. First of all, that scenario is not including yet the disposal of aeroporti di Roma, of 15% of Autostrade per l'Italia. Doesn't include any new initiative besides Nice, that is already in the portfolio. How big the firepower is? It depends on rating you want to keep. We are two notches or more or less above, or three notches above, I mean, investment grade or investment grade threshold, or two notches. So, I mean, with current rating, I believe that probably the number you mentioned is underestimated. But the amount of leverage we can have depends also on the kind of assets we will buy. Because at the end, what is done by rating agencies is not just measuring, adding numbers, is much more profound and trying to understand the intrinsic risk and liquidity of any asset. So most will depend on which kind of assets, where, which kind of, I mean, regulatory, operational assets they will have. So the firepower is significant. And is with good assets will be well above the number you have. Talking about minimum price. As I said today in the Bloomberg interview, I mean, the market will set the price, and if the market will work, and we believe that there will be enough competition because the size of the investment is not huge and governance is proper, the price will be set by the market. I don't want to give any reservation price because immediately the reservation price will become the non-binding offer. And immediately the market will be it's biased by that. I mean, you know what's the sum of the parts of analysts. You know that the sum of the parts doesn't include any extension optionality, includes partially the numbers we have presented today. I do assume that there will be, an evolution on that as well, but I don't want to give any number. Talking about returns, let me say that in order to make the transaction valuable for Atlantia, it's not necessary to have a premium between the return on Autostrade and the return on new acquisitions, because it's sufficient to have a more diversified portfolio to have intrinsically a lower cost of capital. I mean, it's not necessary to sell at 6% and to buy at 80%. What is more important is to make sure that the final cost of capital will be lower because of wider diversification, more resilience. This is why I believe that will not be so difficult to make sure that we can invest properly, adding value, creating, virtuous cycle we have represented here. Higher diversification is higher leverage potential, more debt, lower cost of capital, more competitiveness in buying new assets. This is the name of the game. And we have all the opportunities to play this game faster and deeper than others just because we are starting from very low leverage, very long concessions. There are players that are not anymore capable to raise capital at concession level. You know, some players are forced to raise capital at holding because the concession is not anymore capable to issue debt. It's not our case. Our concessions are so long that can be very efficient in raising capital at company level. And this is why we are pushing down debt to make this leverage game as efficient as possible.
Stefano Gamberini, Equita SIM. Just three questions, if I may. The first, still on slide number 30, 4.5 billion euros is the EBITDA you expect as is in 2020.
Yes.
So to reach this target of 50% of EBITDA from international GDP, my estimates, you should add something of 1 billion US EBITDA in 2020. Am I wrong? And what are the calculation in this case? In if you have also the idea to do some swap of assets or something else, but considering a higher leverage, I will go by far ahead 3x EBITDA in order to add 1 billion US EBITDA with airports and motorways in Europe mainly.
You reach how much debt?
We go in the region of 4x. Probably we have to add more or less 8 to 10 billion euros.
Yeah, probably. I mean, is a little bit overestimated because a part of the increase of exposure to global GDP will be provided by international toll roads that will grow in a natural way. So probably it's not 1 billion; can be a little bit less. But having said that, 4x EBITDA for a group of concessions with the remaining life, average life of 20 years is not, I mean, is not a scandal. It's not a scandal. I mean, the normal reaction is, why so low?
Okay. Thank you. And the other two questions are related. First of all, regarding the tariffs you plug into your model to 2020, 1.5% of additional growth related to CapEx in the Italian motorways. Are these related to Genoa bypass? And what could happen if you sign the agreement, if the government signs the agreement with the European Union regarding these tariffs? And the second question regarding the dividend policy. This 10% DPS growth will remain as is even in case of huge releverage and considering the acquisition you are just speaking about.
Yeah. So in the 2020 tariff dynamic, the contribution of Genova is marginal. I mean, I asked to my people to correct me if I'm wrong, but out of the total 10% tariff growth, or something like that, the Genova will contribute only for 2%. So just, I mean, design remuneration. All the rest will come from works that are already in place, like Adriatic Corridor, like anti-noise barriers, and so on. So the risk of not getting that tariff increase is referring to just one small piece, which is Genova, that is probably 2%, something like that, in the last years. So dividend. I mean, when we decided to say 10% growth, we thought conditions at which we could not be capable to, I mean, deliver what is not a commitment but is an expectation. And we decided, nevertheless, to say that number and to create that expectation because we don't see how, thanks to current financial situation and the P&L dynamics, we could not deliver that result if nothing strange or exception happens. So that 10% is not depending on how successful we will be in accelerating the international exposure.
Good morning. It's Olivia Peters from Berenberg. I've got three questions, please. Firstly, on the news wires this morning, you put out a statement and it was flagged that you said that lower for longer is here to stay. And I was wondering what gave you so much confidence in that statement, given that bond yields are actually going up at the moment and the big theme in the investment world seems to be fiscal stimulus taking hold now that sort of monetary policy has come to an end as a lever. Secondly, in terms of your acquisition strategy, I'm sort of just inferring from what you said on Nice Airport and, as you called it, the old rich guys, the airport being exposed to that. How do you think of demographic trends when you're buying an asset? Is that something you're focused on? I know we've talked a lot about returns and cost of capital and things like that, so I'd like to dig into that a little bit, if possible. And then, obviously, you've separated out your electronic tolling business. Do you view that as a high growth opportunity? I know you've put some targets in, but I'm particularly interested in the US, where obviously the highways trust is effectively bust, and using the gas tax as a means of paying for roads is no longer a viable option as cars have become more efficient. Could you talk about that opportunity there specifically a bit more? Thank you.
Yeah. So starting from rates. Rates are, a weapon with two uses. One is to stimulate demand, is to stimulate, consumption, is to stimulate inflation even, to devaluate state debt. The other is to drive or manipulate FX to help the economy compete with other part of the world's economies. We tend to focus on the first part. So rates as a way to manage, the short-term growth, demand, inflation, consumption. But the reality is that the big economical areas are fighting against each other to support local industries and economies to compete in the world thanks to FX. This is why I believe that this war will not finish soon. Large economies will continue to compete, or large economical areas will continue to compete based on rates and FX. And FX is rates are a good way to manipulate or, drive up and down rates. This is why I believe, but it's a personal belief, I said, that could stay longer than expected, because normally analysts tend to think at the first part, rates as a way to relaunch and revamp economy. But rates are something more than that. Demographics and acquisitions. What is one of the most robust trends in demographics is urbanization. If you look at Chile, Chilean population is growing probably by 1 or 2%. Santiago de Chile is growing by 5%. So good quality asset means an asset that is located where urbanization processes are accelerating or faster. This is why Rodonel for us is a very good opportunity. This is why Chile is a very good opportunity, because urbanization is that. This is one megatrend. The other megatrend is that the rich people in the world is growing double digit every year. And as soon as somebody is rich, wants to show to friends that he has been in Paris, he has been in London, he has been probably in Venice, or he's been in Rome. This is why I believe that assets that are exposed to global GDP and global growth will have a faster growth. So for us, it's a very important element, demography and megatrend. But case by case, the implications are different. Talking about electronic toll collection is not a market that has been rationalized by standards. Every country has own standards. Every state in the US has own strategies. It's very complex. Especially US is a nightmare. It's a nightmare because you have all kinds of systems. None of them is interconnected. You probably know that a truck driver willing to pay tolls without stopping at a tolling station needs to have one specific onboard unit for each state, receive a different, in some cases, more often receives a different bill from different state authorities without having one bill for all the states. In Italy, you don't have more than one bill. You have 25 concessions and you get one bill. In US, not. So there is a lot of inefficiency in the sector. The efficiency could be injected little by little, will not be a fast evolution. By the way, in Europe, we are starting to have Europe-wide operators in tolling services now, after the European Community started to address the issue in the early 2000s. The first standard about tolling system technology was probably in 2001 or 2002. And now we arrive finally 15 years down the road to a European standard, which is an opportunity for us. But I'm saying this to tell you that where they are very far from having one single standard, the path will be very, very long. In payment system, it's the same. This is why there are so many players around in the world close to payment systems and tolling systems. And this is why I believe that some consolidation will happen. And this is why we are keeping Telepass as a separate entity to be part of that consolidation. The part could be more active, more passive. I mean, the real issue is how much value you will create.
Hi, it's Andy Jones at RBC. I just had two questions, if I could, following on from that last one about more capital light type acquisitions. How do you weight them internally versus capital intensive acquisitions? Because, I mean, that's really where you're...
Sorry, can you repeat?
How do you weight capital light acquisition opportunities versus capital intensive acquisition opportunities? Are you likely to pursue one more aggressively over the other? And secondly, you mentioned the impact of diversification on your cost of equity. Do you think once you get to 2020, you might be able to have a cost of equity which would rival an infrastructure fund?
Yeah, theoretically, if I look at analysts, our cost of equity attributed by analysts today is in the range of 6.4, probably is the average, which is probably below already an infrastructure fund. This is the cost of equity attributed by analysts and the cost of equity that, based on target prices, investors are ready to pay or to get or to accept. So we are already competitive because we are different from an infrastructure fund. Normally, we tend to act in a less aggressive way, lower risks, no liquidation and exit risk, by the way, and more liquidity value. We are liquid. Infrastructure funds are not liquid. We have no management cost. They have management cost in excess. So we are already competitive with them. By the way, when we compete, at the end, the most aggressive bidders are not the infrastructure funds, are the VC guys, or according to the assumption they've done on the numbers of growth and so on. So we believe that we are already competitive with them. And we are competitive versus pension funds as well, because we are more free to structure financing than they are. So infrastructure funds are as free as we are, but have higher cost of debt. Pension funds have a lower cost of debt, but they are not as free as we are to have efficient financing, acquisition financing, and so on. So this is why we believe that when we win a tender or a competitive deal, it's not because we are ready to compromise on returns, just because we are more competitive. The second part of the question was on the first?
The capital light acquisitions, yes, versus capital intensive ones.
Let me say that we do prefer to have capital-intensive acquisitions because our job is to have return on capital. The more capital you deploy, the more return you have, if return is good. But in some cases, you could have good returns and higher returns in light capital-intense sectors. Return can be very fast. For example, in Austria, we invested 80 million and we got 220 in 2 years down the road. So return was very high, but the amount was little. We earned in Austria with the tolling system much less than we have earned in Chile with the Costanera. So at the end, size matters. It's good to have a good return in percentage terms, but what matters at the end is the absolute return over cost of capital. This is why high intense assets are better than others in general terms. Less effort at the end, from the management point of view, at least.
Good morning. Oriana Bastianelli from Kairos. Talking about size, is there any maximum size that you set for a single diversification opportunity? And if so, as the size grow, Which kind of additional hurdles are you putting into the analysis?
Size. I mean, we have not addressed, frankly speaking, the issue of size, because also the concept itself of size depends a lot on the structure of the deal. For example, Aeroporti di Roma was mid-sized, but at the end we have not issued new debt because it was a merger. So we have no maximum number. Of course, I mean, there will be should be a return. There should be a compelling return. There should be the opportunity to increase debt, which is, I mean, one of the main targets we have, to accelerate turnover of debt, to reduce average cost of debt. But there is no maximum size.
Hello, it's Marcin Wojtal from Bank of America. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. So just one question. On Aeroporti di Roma, would you consider, again, trying to sell a minority stake in this asset at some point in the next 3-4 years, or that is off the table in your strategy?
Yeah. Let me say that never say never, but today we are not considering. We could consider in the future, but today we are not considering selling. Is already an asset well exposed to global economy. And we will see. Today is not, I mean, part of the scenario.
Marcus Presdy from Jefferies. I have two questions for you, please. The first is in relation to the Autostrada CapEx. 10.5 billion euros of CapEx. Could you give a little bit more clarity on the timing of that CapEx and also the impact that that will have on traffic growth? At what point in the future will you see a step change or an increase in traffic growth as a result of that CapEx to above GDP levels? And the second question is, on the monetization of a stake in Autostrada, this will release substantial capital. What will be the use of that capital? Will it be used to stay within Autostrada to fund CapEx in Autostrada, or will it be used for other parts of the Atlantia group?
Yeah. Second part of the question, monetization of stake. In reality, the seller will be Atlantia. So the money will go straight to Atlantia. So the money will not be used by Yaspi to fund the future plans that should be financed by debt at Autostrada level. So will be immediately available for new initiatives done by Atlantia to add new assets outside Italy. Talking about the color about the CapEx plan, probably we need to move to the slide, but I mean, I would say that within the Toll Roads Italy, there are three main initiatives. One is the Genova bypass. Genova bypass is 4.4 billion, is gross price, is already approved for environmental and urbanistic purposes. The government is not yet giving the final green light to go ahead, because when they give the final green light, they have no more power with the European community to say, I would like to have an extension to make the project executable. And it's a complex project, but it's not more complex than Variante di Valico. In Variante di Valico, we demonstrated to be capable to manage quite well the asset. It's a big project, is roughly close to 10 million cubic meter of digging, which is more or less a little bit less than Eurotunnel and Gotthard tunnel. It's probably more than 40 kilometers of tunnels, but with TBM, tunnel boring machines, we can manage quite well. The largest tunnel boring machine was our tunnel boning machine in Variante di Valico, so we know how to manage them. And this is, I mean, the closest to the green light. I believe that the green light could come in a few months. The other part is the 2007 plan is 5 billion. That 5 billion are represented by 8-9 single projects of debottlenecking close to big agglomerations. For the time being, out of that 5 billion, for 2.4, there is already the green light from the government to go ahead. For the remaining part, there is not yet the green light to go ahead because the government is not certain that part of those works will be necessary or, even more important, will be sustainable at a tariff level. So part of that 5 billion will be an optionality that will be exercised with high probability. Another 50% to have a lower probability to be exercised. On Tirrenica Tor Road is 1.2 billion. We are completing definitive design. We will have environmental and urbanistic approvals in the next year. There is strong push from the Toscana region to have that work done. So there is a high probability to have that work decided. So, I mean, it's optionality in the sense that part is on our side, part is on government side, but most of that 12 billion at the end will be exercised.
Hi, good morning. Can you hear me? Yes. Nicola Pessina from Mediobanca. Just a quick follow-up on this last point on the Tirrenica toll road. Do you see this project as sustainable, financially speaking, standalone, or which kind of other options could you see to make it sustainable? And second question, would you consider diversifying away from transport infrastructure into maybe energy or any other kind of infrastructure should M&A opportunities in transport be missing? Thank you.
So Tirrenica, you're right, is not easily sustainable. This is why in the agreement we signed 1 year ago with the government, we have foreseen to have mutuality between Autostrade per l'Italia and Tirrenian Tor Road. So Tirrenian Tor Road will be financed partially by Autostrade per l'Italia that will be remunerated based on Autostrade per l'Italia tariffs. So we found a way to make the project doable. Other kind of infrastructures. Frankly speaking, we always receive proposals for assets that are not roads, are not airports, requires the same competencies, which is regulatory, which is geological, which is foundations, for example, wind. But we have not seen yet any compelling opportunity to go ahead. In some cases, we have all the competencies necessary to do that job, but we have not seen a good reason to get out from where we are. Okay. Last question, probably or not, no. I have seen three hands, too many for a last question.
Maria Nurkesiva from CreditSights. It will be just one quick question. So could you give a bit more color on moving debt from bond debt from Atlantia level to ASPI, just in terms of timing and to clarify that these bonds will no longer have the exposure to, say, Brazil and Chile toll roads?
Yes, please feel free to add or to explain. Mr. Sonego, head of corporate development.
The process for the push down is in place. We are waiting for the authorization from the trustee, so this will take some weeks yet. Actually, for up to 2025, a fall away guarantee will be released by Atlantia to the past bondholders in order to have any prejudice. So up to 2025, there is still a benefit for Autostrade per l'Italia shareholder bondholders, so they will have the guarantee also on the other assets that we're going to spin off. While thereafter, all new bonds will have no cross default or other mechanism with the other business. Actually, I think we are very short in time because at noon we should have already started the roundtable. So if I can, I suggest to have a 5-10 minutes break, then we can start again with the roundtable. Thank you very much.
Good morning again. Shall we start?
Yeah. Okay. I'm Tommaso Ebert. I'm a reporter for Bloomberg News. I'm here today to moderate a panel, obviously about infrastructure and what's gonna happen in this low cost of capital environment. Today we have you have heard about him before, Giovanni Castellucci. He has been here speaking for the whole morning. Then on my right we have Chantal Pelletier. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
She's a regional director for Caisse des Dépôts et Placements du Québec, so a long-term investor in infrastructure project. You have been working, you know, in the field for a long time, building up the infrastructure portfolio for Caisse des Dépôts. Then we have someone who will give us a more, I would say, futuristic point of view on what's going on in the infrastructure business. Marco Camisani Calzolari, a digital evangelist. Can we call you a digital evangelist?
It's fine.
And he will, you know, bring us a long-term perspective on how, you know, the potential disruption coming in the infrastructure industry from the so-called, you know, 4.0 revolution. So autonomous driving and so on. What will change? Maybe not tomorrow, but the day after tomorrow. And then thanks again for being with us, Walter. Do you want to pronounce it the Italian or the English way? Gubert?
Either way is fine.
Who is a vice chairman for JP Morgan and chairman for JP Morgan in the EMEA region. He has been, you know, in the industry, can I say almost forever? He has been, you know, working in this industry forever. And then we have a newcomer in his job, not a newcomer in the industry, Philip Eiley. He is now at Global Infrastructure Partners. So we're talking again about an investor in the infrastructure field. And he joined after they managed to sell City Airport a few months before Brexit. And so we're going to discuss with them essentially, you know, what we see and which are the big challenges in this in this environment. Let's start again with you, Mr. Castellucci.
Just
briefly, you know, everyone in the room have heard, you know, your plan for Atlantia. But overall speaking, I mean, if you're coming here today to London to present, you know, an update of the plan to investors, it's even because we are living in a special environment. Someone says this could be a golden age for infrastructure spending. How do you see it, generally speaking, you know, how the sector will move and how will you act to grab the opportunity?
Just to go along for the ride.
Let me say that golden age is a dangerous perception. You are never in a golden age in the sense that according to scenarios, there will be some winners, other winners, but nobody can expect to be the winner anyhow because only few will win. Let me say that in this golden age of low cost of debt, the winners will be good, high-quality assets. And the winners will be the operators capable to add the value versus cost of capital in managing, in improving, in controlling, and so on. Will not be the golden age for, I mean, controversial assets with operational risks and so on, because, I mean, the golden age will finish. And after the golden age, normally there is something like bankruptcy or something similar. So this is, I believe, a golden age for operators that can add value in terms of capabilities of managing assets and for good assets that are resilient to the risk that could come down the road, because the road will be anyhow bumpy in the future, but good assets will be less bumpy than others. This is why I believe that leverage is something that can be played if you are capable to cover the risk of financing and refinancing for a long while. If you, I mean, increase leverage and you are not capable to have a match between the duration of the assets and the duration of the debt, you are taking unreasonable risk, and sometimes it happens. So it's a golden age, but not for everybody and all the assets. So we will stay, I believe the market will remain selective. The risk is that in a golden age perception, there will be a lot willing to buy not so good assets as they are good. That's the risk. This is why we need to focus and to be capable to accept an hit rate or an acceptance rate not higher than 20%. If I need to tell you what's the percentage of transactions completed versus the transaction we have analyzed, is not higher than 10%, and will remain quite selective.
Talking about being selective, yeah. Chantal, you are clearly a long-term investor, so you invest now for can you tell us which are the main characteristics you're looking in the investments, and how do you see this going in the coming years, as competition, especially because they are in this special environment, in this particular environment, and there's a huge competition. We saw, GIP sold City Airport at some level, which for some analysts are quite high. So it won't be easy for the buyer, to make profit out of it, some of the things. So how do you see it going on?
Yeah, it is true that you're right to say that there's a specific macroeconomic situation and context that driving the price upward and let's say the return downwards in terms of the adequations between the offer and the demand. And that's relatively because of the dry powder and the willingness of the investor to be more in terms of the infrastructure space. So that's the context that we have to live in, that the context that we have to address. But and it's encouraging the investor like us to just allocate more, let's say, resources and asset to the real asset, to the infrastructure. So having that basis, how we navigate in that whole context, there's probably two pillars that we have for us. And the first one is discipline. It's probably not that in line with the prudence and what you've just mentioned. That context doesn't change what we've been doing for the last 15 years from the beginning of the infrastructure portfolio. It means that we always basis our investment on the long-term partnership, long-term with top-tier industrial players. So we are monetary positions, monetary shareholder. And we have also we're looking at the local content. It's really, really important where we invest in. Who is that expertise, bringing that expertise among the shareholders? So teaming up with those long-term investors, industrial players, and making sure that we deep dive the quality of the asset, the fundamental of the asset. But because at the end of the day, if you have good quality of the asset, you will be able to facing the storm at some point in time, if there is any storm. At the quality of the asset will make sure that we create value. So that's the first one in terms of being prudent, being disciplined in terms of having those assets, that the quality is very important. But at the same time, to address, because we're not different than others, we're just willing to increase our portfolio and putting capital at work because of the low yield on the market, you need to be agile. You need to have that diversification in terms of geography, in terms of how you structure deals and transactions and making sure that you are out there discussing what is the win-win situation, how you can structure the whole thing. We've been putting in place platform also with, let's say, in wind sector in North America with Eve Energy or in the gas sector in Fluxys here in Belgium and also in Europe. So it's really important to have really that to be upfront and proactive on that market and making sure that you create value and you bringing that to at work. So more operational leverage than financial leverage, that's also very, very important.
Philip, moving to you, remaining on the investor side, there's a very liquid market and there's a high demand for infrastructure spending. You just, joined GIP, a few months ago. I mean, if you can tell us, what you're looking for at the moment.
I think GIP's main focuses have stayed the same now for the best part of a decade. They like asset longevity. So energy transmission, transport, airports, ports, heavy rail, water, waste. They're the core sectors. I think what Chantal said is right, which is a lot of people like the core sectors. And if a situation is very visible, as Mr. Castellucci said this morning, a lot of different elements, be it industrial, pension, managed infra fund, can look at it. So it's creativity and flexibility. You can't just wait for an opportunity to turn up. You've got to think about those investment characteristics that you like and see where you can deploy them across family companies, very large industrials, joint ventures. There is a shockingly low deal flow for an enormous amount of capital pure play infrastructure opportunities.
And, I mean, which are, if I can ask you, the pillars I think you're looking for when you make an investment decision?
Mm-hmm. duration and longevity is the first thing. You have to have decades of visibility on the earnings. We're a closed-end fund, so we have to get in and out. So there has to be decades remaining for the next guy as well. So that's a primarily a gating item within the asset itself. All of the traditional features that you would expect to see need to be triangulated, so regulation and policy and governance and value. But the biggest thing that we need once it's passed the threshold test is operational upside. We have to be able to dramatically improve the performance of the business.
So at the end of the day, the human part of it is still very important, so the management of the company,
It is for our business model. We have return thresholds that are higher than, as you would expect, a direct investing pension fund. So we have to be able to see a platform where we can deliver that operational upside.
And, Walter, moving to the banking side, they are all telling us there are, many opportunities and high competition. And there is also a gap between infrastructure spending and infrastructure needs in the world globally. Some estimate by McKinsey say, there are at least $1 trillion a year which is not spent in infrastructure. It should be, because sometimes the needs and the one who is willing to spend are not connected. So, which is the role, of the banker in this environment, and how can you help those things to be matched?
Help our clients curb the excitement, because I think, as Giovanni said, it is a golden period of time. You mentioned McKinsey. Their numbers project $57 trillion between now and 2030. And understandable, given how until now we've seen monetary policy at work, but not fiscal stimulus, and that will have to change. And, of course, with interest rates where they are, it's an obvious opportunity. And, of course, investors. The wall of money is huge. You talk to big investors, and so many of them are saying we're going to move from a 10% allocation to infrastructure to one that is more like 15%. Now, 5% increase, when you look at the amount of money available, is a huge number. And so that creates an obvious challenge. You look at 2015, the volume, infrastructure volume, was $350 billion, year-on-year increase 10%, GDP growth 2.4% globally, which that gap between GDP and growth in infrastructure, which, by the way, your numbers showed something similar. So yeah, if as we look forward, we see a great opportunity in terms of growth in markets, growth from new deals. Transitioning out of closed-end funds, new areas. You mentioned electronic payment, but there are so many of them. And, of course, new countries. What used to be Western Europe, United States, we now hear more and more Latin America, Brazil, Asia, India, China. In Europe, we hear more Eastern Europe in search of greater yield. So the opportunity is there, and the opportunity is there in terms of new financing structures.
yeah, this is something,
what happened,
you know,
to Basel III.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Basel III rules and the upcoming banking rules may play a role, you know.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. It's banking rules, and it's the strength or not so of the industry, which means that project bonds have become a lot more popular, which means that you have new investor classes coming in, debt infrastructure funds. So there is clearly an opportunity, but the challenge is equally significant. In core markets, it is what has been mentioned. It's a very competitive environment, which compresses returns, which compresses pricing for often very aggressive business models. That's in core markets. And then you have the new markets. In new markets, you have lack of experience, lack of track record, which, again, I think points to the need for selectivity, for really knowing how to manage those assets in a disciplined way. Or else, I think there will be tears shed after the golden period. Interest rates is another element. Everybody talks today about the fact that interest rates will stay low for a long time. Probably so. But at some point, they will go up. And it is now that investors, operators need to think about how they ensure that they have the proper inflation protection and that the way they structure the financing limits that risk, which is real. So an exciting period ahead, but with some potholes.
And, you know, talking about the challenges, let's move forward, Marco. Let's look, you know, what's in, and how the industry can change if and when you know, autonomous driving and all this form of disruptive change in the landscape may take us a tour, you know, because we are discussing more, you know, financial terms and
exactly.
Investment, but tell us, you know, show us, and what do you think, and where do you think can change in the next 15 years?
Yeah, so it's not easy, of course, but you know, William Gibson wrote that the future is already here, but it's not just evenly distributed. Okay, that's very important because it's on the, you know, the roots of everything. And I took some notes about some particular, you know, people that was tried to forecast the future. And for example, Sir William Preece, he was the president of the Telegraph and Society in the UK, and he said, you know, the Americans have need of the telephone, but we don't have the need because we have plenty of messengers boys in the UK. So they think, you know, that we don't need the phone, or there is no reason why anyone want a computer in their home, said Ken Olson, president of the Digital Equipment. Or the last one is very funny. In the 1955, Alex Wintle, he was the president of the vacuum cleaner company, said nuclear-powered vacuum cleaner will be a reality in 10 years. Okay, so it's not easy, you know, to see the future. You can see maybe, you know, the next 5, maybe 10 years, but I remind you that this particular technology, or this iPhone, you know, the iPhone was introduced less than 10 years ago, 9 years ago, half. And this disrupted everything in our pocket, in our life. Before of these, we had a keyboard. Well, actually, I know most of you loved, you know, the BlackBerry, but who cares? This changed everything. So it's not easy. You know, maybe we can see 10 years ahead of us. But there are some pillars in this future we are in front of us. We have seen these changing very, very quickly because of the digital. Digital is so fast. It's faster than us. So the limit for the future are the people, because we tend to be, you know, we like habits. We are very slow because we are human. Okay, so technology goes so fast. And we have a lot of things in front of us. For example, work, workers. Now we have, we have to talk about the driverless cars and everything related to that. And of course, they are coming. They're already here. You see, Uber in Copenhagen already, if you want to try this experience, you can go in Copenhagen and you'll find a driverless cab. Of course, there is a technician, that's the technical definition of the driver that actually it doesn't drive the car, and you can try this nice experience. But
do you see this somehow impacting the infrastructure we're discussing today, like highway and traffic on the highway and infrastructure needed if autonomous driving will get on the road?
Heavily. But before that, before driverless cars, there are robots, because driverless car is a kind of robot. Okay, it's a part of particular kind of robot. A robot will, as we know, maybe in the next 10, 15, not too many years ahead, will steal the 50% maybe of our jobs, because we don't have any more the kind of robots of the first, second, and third industrial revolution. Now they are cognitive, intelligent. So they can, substitute all the middle management of most of, let's say, lawyers, studios, or whatever. So cars, of course, will change everything as well, because today we already experienced this. A train, for example, it's a kind of, it doesn't have to decide. It cannot go right or left. It cannot only go in straight way, okay? And this is, a driven way to be autonomously driven. But a car now, today, I can see, for example, a line of cars, of trucks, that cross a country, maybe with a distance of 20 centimeters between one and the other one, between them, and with a speed of 100 miles per hour, and that can, create a kind of long train that cross the country. So you can see a future like this.
When you talk about future, you talk about, 50 years, 10 years, or a century.
Okay. So as I said, it's not easy. But what I can say is that before 2030, I think, in my opinion, that the 30% of the cars will be smart, part driverless or completely driverless. A driverless car is, the top level of driverless car, of course, don't need anything, not a driver, not anything. You just don't have any more the steering. Connected cars can, of course, avoid incidents. And as we know, driverless car are more safely than cars with drivers, because the human driver causes 95% of incidents.
So you see, in the next 15 years, those things becoming real, essentially, being on a road.
Earlier.
Are you prepared, Mr. Castellucci, to have on your highways? We're talking about challenges.
Are other drivers prepared to have a driverless car driving in the middle of the lane? This is the issue. The issue is, combination and the compatibility of two ways to drive. That's the real problem. But let me say something more long term. If we see the dynamics of transportation, since probably one century, we experienced an increase of market share of individual transportation versus public transportation. That has been very, very strong. And it's still there. We measure in Italy that even if the country invested tens of billions of euros for high speed, we are still gaining market share versus train, because cars are more free, are well-managed, because are self-managed, not managed by complex organizations, and we are still gaining market share versus train. Close to big agglomerations, we are needing we need to the bottleneck, part of the 5 billion of the bottlenecking you have seen before is close to big agglomerations because we are still gaining market share versus trade. All these new technologies will make individual decisions and transportation more freer and more, practical and less expensive. I mean, like computers. It's true. This is changing everything. I remember when I was at university, I needed to connect with Pisa from Florence to have 10 minutes of continuous system modeling, and I needed to share with a lot of people from everywhere in Italy. Now, I mean, everybody can have everything. This evolution will help individuals to manage their life, their freedom, without being impacted by the complexity of public transportation systems that are more and more complex to be managed. So is the unbundling, the explosion of public transportation. That's the real issue. And anytime there is an explosion of public transportation is good for us. Explosion from the business point of view.
Yeah, clearly. Not the real explosions,
of course. So, I mean, for us it's an opportunity. We are thinking about long-range car sharing, which is not today an issue. Long-range driverless car sharing. This is something we are thinking about because we believe that the evolution will help people to self-manage themselves without depending on the unions, on the strikes, on Alitalia, on Ferrovia, or whatever.
So for you, there is also a chance, you know, going back more to, you know, financial terms, to add value, essentially, to create new services that add the value that, you know, potentially would improve your margins, you know, which is in the infrastructure environment always one of the
issues. Let's say creating a service is probably too much, but getting a part of the value added of the value chain is possible. This is something we can think about. It's not for tomorrow, because as I said, the real issue is how to make compatible a driverless with a non-driverless car. We need to make sure that they will drive in the same way. Otherwise, it will be even more risky to have a driverless car in a with driver flow. But sooner or later will come, no doubt about. There will be a convergence. By the way, the system we have in Italy with Tutor, which is controlling the average speed.
Yeah, we know it
on
quite
sections,
well.
Yes, but at the end is a way to make the traffic flow more smooth,
fluent,
more compatible with, I mean, an unmanned car. So we are ready.
Let me ask Chantal and Philip that, you know, if you consider this, you know, in long-term aspect when making investment nowadays in infrastructure, if you see that there, you know, there's something disruptive may change the landscape.
Of course, because, well, first of all, we are long-term investors.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We're spending a lot of time to make conviction around where is. We cannot pretend to have, let's say, a crystal ball or having the, let's say, the reality, but we to analyze a fundamental of a business or a fundamental of an asset, you need to ask those questions about where what is the possibility, where is going, what is the trend, are we so, and putting yourself in a sector or for an asset that is where you believe the trend will be in a certain way, not necessarily exactly what will happen because no one has the reality and know what where it will go, but it's critical to know exactly, at least to ask your questions. What will be the future? How it will affect your business? And making sure that you have you agile, your management is agile to address those trends and to make sure that you taking the opportunity to have let's say to make your business taking profit of that and
let
create
me,
value.
Let me ask also Philip, you know. It is something that, you know, plays a role nowadays when you're making...
Absolutely. I think the biggest sort of technological disruption that we've seen maybe in the transport infra portfolio that we have is capacity and processing.
Clearly.
You think about Gatwick, you think about London City, two of the most obvious assets that we have in our portfolio. It is all about peak hour capacity. That's the capacity constraint, not what you can do in a year, not what you can do in a day. What can you do in the busiest hour? The technology that's come on stream in the last 10 years about processing people, processing bags, and processing the turnaround of a piece of tin that weighs 150 tons have transformed the quantum that you can push through and the speed that it takes, which clearly alters your investment cycles. It alters your asset longevity in terms of how long that stuff can last. But you are investing in alternative, more IT-focused technology, less on cement and space. So you're solving solutions with IT rather than building more piers, which in congested first-world urban locations is going to be essential because nobody has the luxury of space when they're deploying pieces of infrastructure in a modern city.
And talking about challenges, Walter, let me go back to when you said at the beginning about, we are in a low interest rate environment, won't last forever. This is one of the challenges that long-term investors have nowadays and have to consider. The other is, the geopolitical risk. We saw what is happening post-Brexit, U.S. election, in Italy, referendum. How an investor should, take care of the geopolitical risk when you do long-term investment, and how can you help, from your side?
Well, obviously, geopolitics have always been important, but they are particularly important in an interconnected world as we have it now, and it affects everything we do. It affects values. It affects investment decisions. But really, I think it just has to bring you back to basic principles. Whether you're a bank, whether you're an investor, whether you're an operator, you need to focus on doing what you understand, concentrating on where true value is, avoiding the hype, and having a structure, a financing, a capital structure that is consistent with the risks you're taking. There is no question that with interest rates as low as this, there is a temptation to misallocate resources. That is a risk that the investment community and the economies of today are exposed to. As you say, at some point that will change. And in the meantime, we need to be very wary of investments that are made with a bias based on interest rates that are not sustainable.
Okay, thank you. I don't know if we have more time. If you have any question from the floor, if you want to enter the debate with us. We have a couple one.
Yeah, thank you. I had one question for the representative from GIP. You mentioned the scarcity of deal flow in the infrastructure world. And I wonder whether that's creating a problem for you and forcing you to look at the listed equities market. Because I was personally a bit surprised by the investment in gas natural. So I wonder whether you are seeing valuations more attractive in the public market than in the private market.
Scarcity of pure 100% clean infrastructure opportunities has been a fact of life for many years. So creativity is definitely required. I think in gas natural situation, yes, it's listed. Yes, we took a small stake. But in partnership with the two other existing shareholders, it clearly gives us a very influential governance proposition. I think on the final point, do we see a big gap between public market valuations and private market infrastructure valuations? We do. That gap's been large and has been around for a long time. And currently, because of some of the financial products that are available, that private transactions tend to utilize, but public companies do not, then that valuation gap is significant.
Yeah, just a question to all of you sort of involved in ownership of airports or roads. There seems to be sort of difference there in terms of what you can do to boost traffic in airports where there are cases of particular sort of skill at boosting traffic in airports. And yet in road networks, there isn't much talk of that. It seems that traffic is sort of a given, good or bad. Is there any way one could think about this as some of a consumer business on the one hand and a B2B business on the other, and be more aggressive in promoting traffic? I don't know, make the service area a destination for fun? Or is there any sort of innovative way one can think of to sort of push traffic, maybe in places where there is less traffic, where there is potentially more real estate that's sort of cheap, in a way that would you'd attract people to the road as opposed to then only use it as a utility from and to work? Is there anything there that one can think about?
Yeah. I mean, the common perception is that in airports you can create traffic. By the way, you can really create traffic if you are a small airport ready to pay a lot of money to Ryanair. It's less evident how to create traffic in a large hub where you decide to do not discriminate among airlines, which is the case in Aeroporti di Roma. By the way, we are doing a lot of marketing efforts. We have, for example, Chinese airlines. We have today 9 Chinese cities connected with Rome, the same number of connections of Paris, which is probably a much bigger attraction for Chinese. This is the result of proactive marketing activity as it is paying off. So in airports, you can do improving quality, reducing turnover time, improving reliability of the system, improving finger rotations, and so on. This is something you can do to make the airport more, efficient for the organization of airlines. For example, if an airline decides to have a base in an airport, there will be a 20-30% boost in volumes, because having a base in an airport implies that you will have other connections, filling the capacity of the plane that is sleeping in that airport as extra capacity. So, there is something you can do, a lot of you can do in airports. In toll roads, what you can do is not giving discounts, of course, or doing advertising. What you can and what we have done is to make the trip in a toll road a familiar experience. So making the toll road familiar to people, not as something new, risky, and so on, is a way to make the road more, used. For example, Telepass is a way to make the road more familiar because you don't know how much you pay, for example. It's a very good way to boost volumes. With Telepass, you know probably at the end of the month or 3 months how much you paid overall, unless you want to get, the line-by-line description of all your trips. This is not a joke, a huge booster of volumes. Telepass users tend to grow consumption much faster than non-Telepass users. So a good way to boost volumes is to, boost that. Service areas, yes, but is a minor element. Much more important, for example, the draining asphalt. When you drive and you see where you're driving, you feel more comfortable than when you don't see because of spray effect. So there is something you can do. We have done. The results are positive, but it's not marketing. It's making the toll road familiar in the life of people. This is the only way you can do to boost volumes.
I think that Marco maybe has a suggestion.
Yes, there is a company called Surf Air that now is starting giving a service like Uber for £2,900 pounds. You can have an unlimited flight between some airports like, London and Paris and whatever. And I think that this kind of services, like, this Surf Air, this Uber Pool, are, helping to grow up the traffic on the streets and in the air.
So more web services. Another question down there, please.
Yes. Do you see the potential of autonomous cars to improve local road efficiency to be a threat for toll roads in general? And what do you think is ASPI's core proposition for road users?
Yeah. Autostrade per l'Italia, the ASPI network, is a national network with a strong component of long-range traffic. Even if the average length is not so big, I don't see a real risk of cannibalization between normal roads and toll roads, because the problem of normal roads is not just, the congestion and the new ways to the unmanned self-driving cars could improve a little bit congestion, but they are, slowed by a lot of traffic lights. The problem is that the urban roads in Italy are really urban. There is nothing in the middle. There is either urban roads that are in the middle of the small town or toll roads, because toll roads have been developed early in the history of the country, have been developed in the 50s. Before then, the government could decide to invest in a second generation of normal roads. In other countries, they did the opposite. They developed the second generation of urban roads, the urban roads 0.2, in the 60s or 70s, and then added toll roads as a third level of transportation network. In Italy, there is nothing in the middle, because the toll road has been the alternative since the beginning to the second generation of toll roads. So you either have the toll road or you have the own ancient Roman road, the Via Emilia, Via Flaminia. We are, talking about 2,000 years old roads at the end. So I don't see any risk there. I see more opportunities than risks.
So from Via Flaminia to autonomous driving, you know, we discuss a bit what could be the long-term future of the infrastructure business. If we don't have any more questions, I think we can end here. Thank you very much for... We have another one?
Yes, I think.
Hello?
Yeah, just a quick question. We're talking about the low cost of capital environment. You're all kind of complaining about the pressure on returns, but yet none of you guys, I suspect, are actually giving up on high equity IR thresholds. So do you need now a reality check in the current world, meaning for new opportunities, especially on privatization and from public bodies to launch new supply of projects, you just need to give up your high equity IRs and just basically foster a bit of supply by lowering thresholds. Is it time now for you to act on a reality check, or do you think you can keep on going with 10, 12, 15% equity IR thresholds?
Who off the floor?
We are certainly constantly evolving our product range. So we have a country-specific fund in Australia, which has different country-specific return requirements. We have a debt fund, which can do fixed income products within the infrastructure space. We have co-investment principles and managed account principles. But for the core product of the managed closed-end fund, there are absolute return thresholds, which have been around for decades, which don't show any signs of altering to take into account current interest rate environment. When investors allocate across the infrastructure spectrum, they look at the public listed, they look at direct investing opportunities, and they look at the managed funds. When they allocate to the managed funds, they appear to still want certain hurdle requirements. So is it going to be challenging in these environments than it was 10 years ago? It is, because the hurdle rate hasn't changed and rates have gone from 6 to 1. Which is why we have to be slightly more creative in how we go about designing and structuring our deals.
Yeah. I would like to give a not different, but from a different angle answer to this question. In reality, we have a threshold, which is a moving target, which is the cost of equity you attribute to us. We cannot invest, never. We could never invest at a risk-adjusted return lower than the cost of capital you attribute to us. Because otherwise, I should give back money to you or I should buy back my stock. So we have a threshold, a minimum level. We should stay substantially above that level. That level is not fixed. It is depending on the market, but we cannot invest lower than the return you expect from our stock. So, I mean, there is some evolution during the years, but let me say that what I've seen about the cost of equity you attribute to us, I mean, has not reflected at all the reduction in rates. So there is quite a stability in cost of equity. You pretend, and return on equity you pretend from us, which is good, by the way. And for us, that's a threshold. So we can't go below, because otherwise we could destroy value. It would be better to give back money to you or to buy back our stocks. For the time being, it's not the case. We do believe that thanks to flexibility, thanks to operational ability and capabilities, we can still provide a huge, I mean, a good return. Let me say a few words about listed and non-listed. The main reason why listed are cheaper than non-listed is that listed, because of structural inefficiency of financing, cannot benefit in full from current low rates situation. The reason why private deals are so expensive is that in a private deal, from day one, you can restructure, zero-based, the best optimal financial structure, which is not the case when the company is listed. So the discount is totally justified. The real value is when a listed company could become efficient as a private company. The project we are putting forward is a way to introduce the right financial structure, the right leverage to make this gap as close as possible. This is the big challenge for a listed company as we are.
You want to add something from your point of view?
Well, maybe at the point of view of a money manager, we are not necessarily a pension fund per se, because we just have the, let's say, the asset side of the balance sheet. But our life is investment. So we have all the asset class. So for a CDPQ of this world is always a question of your allocations of between those asset class. So you're right to say that in terms of you have to make the judgment about what is this, where is the most attractive risk return profile that you can find. And when you look at the bond yield today, is that the lowest that you can find on the market. So you make the comparison and you make your analysis and you say, okay, I want to invest. I have liabilities, I have a pension that I need to make sure that I'm covering. So what do? You just look at the market and you are encouraging to look at the real asset on the basis that, as I pointed out at the beginning, making sure that you stay disciplined, you stay prudent about the fundamental of the assets and what's going on in the future and how that asset or project or company will react in the future, and being comfortable with this risk, let's say risk return profile. Of course, the return 15 years in 2000 and 2004, when we started to build the portfolio, it was very different. Very, very different. It's evolving. We're living in that world. So it's a question of your environment in investment. Where do you want to put your allocation, and making sure that you basis your investment on the fundamentals and the pillars that I've pointed out at the beginning?
Sure. If we don't have any. Yeah, we have a final question. Yeah.
Hearing the whole panel, I'm just kind of a bit surprised why there's not more of a flow of capital into the ASEAN with the rise of India's and China's and Malaysia's and Indonesia. Is that because of, and you talk of a golden age of the lowest interest rates, I think, since the inception of the Bank of England in the 1600s. Why is there seem to be a bit of a kind of, you guys are taking a bit more risk for the future growth of your businesses? As you said, it's a very competitive market out there. To find a very selective investment, which is going to be basically ticking all your right boxes, is kind of retrenching, I think, as opposed to being a bit more creative with how you're kind of you're positioning yourself. So I just want to just kind of get some feedback on that.
I can start. I mean, when we talk about regulatory risk, political risk, and so on, we need to be precise. I mean, concessions can be either regulated, implying some discretionality, or or ruled by contracts. We tend to, to prefer concessions ruled by contracts because in that case, any political change will have more problems in changing a contract because normally contracts are protected by all legislations. Expectations are not. So first, there is a separation between contract-ruled or regulated contracts. The problem is that in those geographies, we tend to see, with the exception of India, more regulated contracts or contracts that are more loose with a lot of discretionality. And when you have discretionality, an environment you don't know very well, and assets that are not vital for the country, you put yourself immediately in a weak position. In order to survive in this sector, you need to be strong. You need to be at least equal to governments in terms of not power, because we are not talking of power, but in terms of legitimacy and dignity. If you are in a situation where the contract is unclear, the asset is not so important for the country, there is no legislation protecting the contract, it's better to stay out.
Governments change.
But the contract not.
Governments and the way the feeling of a particular country from a political sense will change. We've had Brexit here, 6 months ago, that there's been a wave of complete change. So to kind of have a long-term view on something and to link it to a political arena, I'm a CFO in Malaysia, and I see a lot of great opportunities in Malaysia. Indonesia is, I think, the eighth fastest growing economy in the world at the moment. And I think what I hear, and I totally understand the dynamics of it, you've got to choose the right asset, be safe and be strong, I get that. But are we not also losing a period of time of opportunity to create more of a market for your shareholders at some point in the future?
Probably we're limited by our knowledge. That's the problem.
Sorry, guys, I just don't want to...
Anyone want to... Walter, do you want to conclude on this? I mean, the fact that, he's somehow pitching on the fact that someone should be more courageous in the industry.
Well, I would agree with both speakers in the sense that it's happening. We are seeing much more investment going into emerging markets generally, and the region you're referring to as well. It's happening, and it will continue to happen, and it will. But it will be. The growth will be curbed by those factors. When you're making an investment for the next 20 years, you better be very confident. And there are a lot of unknowns that one needs to get comfortable with. So the challenge is also for those countries to help us investors to make those decisions with knowledge and confidence. I'm sure more of that is happening. Emerging markets will be a bigger and bigger part of the average portfolio of an infrastructure fund.
We are in the emerging markets already through portfolio companies. So the energy companies that we invest in have lots of emerging markets exposure. The ports company that we own has lots of emerging market exposure. We'd like to do more. I think knowledge is a very good barrier. How much knowledge and how many countries and how many points of connectivity and relationships can you develop at one stage? And the maturity of the situation and the asset and the structures. A lot of the promising situations that we look at in the emerging markets have some fundamental flaws. And the governments aren't around and the officials aren't around long enough to fix them. It's still an inherent problem.
Maybe just to hand to complete that. Sure. And as a CDPQ, we had an initiative 2 or 3 years ago at the case level also to analyze, let's say, the different countries and going. So having that perspective of the emerging market is probably where having more knowledge around the emerging markets and making sure that we getting that knowledge, not pretending that we'll be at some point a local player, far from being that. But making sure that we have an idea of what kind of country we could be, let's say we understand better, we could be more comfortable, and applying the same DNA that we have, the same strategy that we have for, let's say, the countries that we are in at the moment, and going there and making some partnership with local players, like in Mexico with the Afores, the pension fund, the local pension fund. So making sure that we're making that move, but in the right way. So we're there and we're progressing and at some certain pace, but it's certainly an initiative for the CAS to grow that that specific asset allocations to emerging market.
Okay, thank you very much.
Can we take the last, very last question?
Hi, I have a question on risk and returns, and particularly for the investors. I'm just wondering, given that returns are under pressure as the market has become more competitive, how do you view greenfield risk? Are you moving more into that space? How do you manage construction risk? Could you comment on that, please? Thank you.
This could open, you know, a complete new discussion.
Maybe in terms of a greenfield, I mentioned, you know, being agile. It means also diversification in terms of what we could do and how we do it. Greenfield is part of the what we're looking at. There's not that much. And on the market per se, you need to be more, let's say, out there to find the right opportunity. But it's not something that it's outside of our, let's say, what we would like to do. But we have a kind of an initiative in Quebec, specifically in our backyard with the government, to manage the process on a greenfield project. It's a train project, a very big project, $5 billion project, where we're managing all the planning from the planning process, financing process, organizing everything, and managing the constructions and also the financing going forward. So it's a different role. It's a different business model. But for that type of greenfield project in our backyard for the moment is really something that we're looking at, and it's interesting to see how we can structure and be creative as a model, as a business model for that type of project.
When you greenfield within an existing portfolio company with knowledge, so a greenfield renewables deal, great. We have an industrials renewables company. Greenfield port, great, not a problem. We've done greenfield in the US. And I think the big differential between the US and the rest of the world, never mind just, you know, just Europe, is greenfield projects have access to the capital markets in the US, so they can get rating, they can get long-term funding, and you don't have that horrendous refi risk the day it opens. We haven't as yet found greenfield opportunities anywhere outside of those two elements, and don't envisage that would change anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, most of our initiatives are brownfield. We did some extreme brownfield in India. It was, a brownfield with a lot of greenfield. But generally speaking, we believe that traffic risk for pure greenfield projects is very high. This is why we are ready to take that risk only in urban areas where, in the long term, demand is more driven by capacity than vice versa. In urban areas, when you have a toll road, sooner or later you feel it. Because, it's the only way to move fast in an area where normally you cannot move. So normally greenfield is out of our radar screen with some exceptions, urban areas. This is why we finance the greenfield of Rodonel without having the traffic risk for the next years and not anymore the construction risk. And we are ready to take the greenfield risk in urban areas. Not anymore.
Okay, thanks a lot. I think that concludes our roundtable. Thank you very much for the discussion. Well, and thank you. Thanks.
Thank you very much.